You have to be on their level. You can't put any Tom, Dick, and Harry on to be business agent or own an organization.
Now, were at that time, all three Hart, Schaffner, and Marx were still alive, weren't they, when you first started?
Yeah, they were all alive then.
Now, were they in and out? Were you aware of them, or did you, the workers never related to them at all?
Well, at the end, well, I met Hart, and I met Schaffner's son. I can show you a letter from him there. I tried to get he's a big doctor today, jumping from one thing into another. I wanted him to go to Northwestern University. I got him in all right. But I met him. He was learning the trade. He wanted to know exactly what he was. I mean, Schaffner was a humanitarian himself. He said he didn't realize that the conditions were as bad as that. He found
that
out.
Yeah, that's why I asked you about
it. Yeah. But now, Hart, I met the other human, I told him. He said, Sarah, what do you want to be business agent for? Human is married already. I mean, that's it. Human is married already. That's his marriage. And it never crossed my mind. I went there because and they made my life so miserable. I don't know. I really don't know how I took it. I don't know. But I've got it written down. I wrote just came across it the other day. A friend of mine just passed away about 5 months ago. She was in Philadelphia organizing. I've improved on my spelling and my writing in general in the years. But I tell her how lucky she is. See, we were two business agents in Hartz's Mark. Two men, and I went in against the top leadership's will. They were all against me. And I say, I want to make place for a woman. I'm not interested in them, money end of it. That didn't faze me. I just wanted to make place for a woman. From Hillman down, they threatened me physically. And I told the one that I admired most, and I still, he's gone now, but I still think that he was one of the best labor leaders in the group. He did not give women the opportunity or the place that they deserve. And that score, I never agreed with him. We always fought on that. He threatened me. And I told him, you know what you can do with it. I told him outright. But that didn't take any... You see, I was able in my ignorant way, or my naive way. You know, I don't think it was all ignorant. It was more naive to separate my personal feeling to the big things what they're doing for labor as a whole. I can talk an hour more later. Maybe you better ask me questions.
We'll get into all of that a little bit more when we get into when you were a business agent. So then you were at Hart, Schaffner, and Marx when the 1910 strike started.
No. When the 1910 strike started, I was only 17 years old, 18. I was, that was, figure out, I'm 80 years old, and that was 1910.
So you were 18?
18.
And where were you working then at that time?
Hartz's Mark.
So you were working there,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
And so when the walkout came, you walked out.
Oh, sure.
And then what? That was the first time that you really were thinking about unionism?
I didn't know anything about it. I think I told you last time. I came home, it was on a Friday, September 22nd, with Russia, this time of the year. No, this is Pesach, I'm mixed up. We had the shul, my father was a rabbi, and the Jews were sitting in the stoop in Chicago, and the newspaper wrote 60,000 tailors were on strike. Before I left, I came home early because of, I asked the phone whether I should come back after the holidays. He said, by all means. I knew something was going on, what I didn't know. When I came home, I asked my father, what is a strike? So he gave me the first interpretation of a strike. I didn't know what a strike. But he said, then I started going to meeting to the extent that I was involved right away. And my sister, the one lives out in Sherman Oaks, she was 13, 14. Well, she must be 15 because I was 18. She'd be on the corner selling papers for the strike. She didn't know, but she had a good time. She was young and gay and singing.
So you would go out picketing?
I was picketing Saturday, Sunday, it didn't make any. So was my brother. We were all good strikers for that matter.
So the strike just happened, and then you realized about it.
Oh, yes.
And
that's the time I became press conscious, really.
From the talks that were given during the strike?
From Hillman, from Frank Rosen, from Schlesberg, from the speakers. See, then I started to read up, and then I tell you, see, that I started going to lectures to the IWW, the anarchist movement. I went all over, but I didn't join anything. I was no joiner. I'm still not a joiner. I'm not in the hurry to join anything. I was reluctant to give you an interview. For that matter, I was asked while I was in school. I know I'd sent him to the National Left. But Ruth Miller, you thank Ruth Miller for
I did.
Because I'm telling you things that I wouldn't, because I see, to me the Amalgamated Union means an awful lot. But all its imperfections, I know what it has done. Unfortunately, this import business is, but it's not only the Amalgamated, it's the industry as a whole, the whole country. From this point of view, I was talking to a group yesterday. I said, my dreams are maybe a long way off. This won't help, that won't help. It takes international brotherhood to bring it about. Where there won't be this right division in labor. This country lives better. We are getting closer and closer. Now it's Japan, tomorrow it's China, it's workers. I've stated it 100 times, but we got to face it as it is. I don't like to patronize material goods that come in from other countries. Take away the bread from my American brothers and sisters. I don't like to do it. I don't like to do it. Because my dreams, I'm hoping that they'll come. But until it comes, what am I going to do? What should I do?
You do the best that you can all your life. And that's what you've done.
Well, I talk about it, and that's not enough. You got to do something more than just talk about it. And the Amalgamated did try. They tried to bring international understanding. And that's why I say that our union, with all its little imperfections and not doing the right thing by women is still a great union. See? And that's why I say some people will take out the worst part of it and magnify it. That's why I refuse to give any kind of interview. Okay, Amy.
Okay, during the strike, you went to all these meetings. Now, by this time, did you speak English pretty good?
Yeah, I started speaking English the first week.
Did you go to classes or anything, or you just picked it up?
Yeah, now here's another thing. I went to night school. Because I was very eager. I said, I didn't want to come to this country. I cried. Everybody wanted to come. I said, I don't want to come to America because I become a goy. I won't be able to cut my hair. And I won't be able to marry a Shiva Bucher. I don't. But once I'm here, I want to do what's right, and I'll make this my country. I'm not a crazy patriot, but I love my country. So I went to night school. And I was doing fairly well. Until, this was, by the way, after the 1910 strike, I think. Yes, sure. Because after that time, I couldn't. The hours were so terrible.
How many hours did you work before the strike? Do you remember?
I don't ask. There were no limit. There was no 6 hours. In Hartsfield-Markdale, there was from 7:30 to 6 o'clock. From 7:30 to 6 o'clock. And Saturday to 4 o'clock. 12 o'clock. I mean, there was no limit. And sometimes you work Sundays. Anyways, what was I saying?
About school.
Yes, I went to night school. One night, we're talking about the Haymarket Riot, the anarchist movement. Of course, as I said, this was already after the 1910 strike. And there was a teacher by the name of Miss Peach. I can see her. I have her picture before me. So I get up. I says, Miss Peach, how do you know that these people committed those crimes? She says, Miss Rosner, I know because my mother had a friend, a policeman, and he told him. I says, God damn it, if that's your information, I took my books and I walked. Now, if that's the kind of teaching you're going to get, I didn't want part of it. So, did I hurt her? I hurt him. But I couldn't take it. You see, I was young and foolish. I should have told her to go to hell and go on with my English, you see, but I couldn't control myself. You see, I wasn't so smart. But I couldn't take it.
So this was at a city school, then? Wasn't it?
Yes.
A school run by the union?
No, public school.
Yeah, wasn't the classes from the union?
No.
So then, so it was during the strike with listening to all the people and going to all these meetings that you really became class conscious.
See, I did some meeting before. I did some Hungarian when I was in the company. I read all my life. And I never read, I shouldn't say never, these so-called cheap novels. And I know people that it doesn't make any difference as long as they read. I never give myself up to reading this. I'd read historical novels, yes, Dostoevsky and Kropotkin, and you know, I'd be good, delve into it. I'd read slowly, so I'd get something out of it. I wouldn't say that I mastered it all. I got something out of it. To this day, because it's hard in my eyes now. Now you go ahead and ask me.
Sarah, before the strike, when you were at Hart Chapman and Marks, were there systems of fines if you talked to people or if you ruined the garment or something?
Well, listen. During the strike, it was like this. We were on the picket line. what I did is fit the big print. So it's all right. Now, you're talking about 1910. We did what we could. And I say that some of the things are not fit to be revealed or printed. I don't want to talk about. When you're talking about women, you're talking about not the deeds of... you do what you can to bring about changes. Because there were two young men in Chicago that were killed outright for what? When I followed the funeral procession in cold winter, and it was horrible what they did to us with the women and all that. So you ask me some.
What was during the strike? What was your relationship to other women? Were the women?
The women were in the forefront. This is what I want to tell you. This is when you. And I'll you go ahead and talk to me. I'll tell you that the women were in the forefront. This is in the essence of my revealing to you the women's activities in my union. They were in the forefront, and to say that I put the blame entirely on men, no. I told you, when I was running for business agent, they shouted from the back, go, why do you want to take a man's job away? However, it's not enough. I was elected by men, not by women. Is that right? So they have to have their heads opened up in order to realize what they're doing to themselves. And to the men as well. Now, you take the constitution of the, I think it's, if I recall correctly, the steelworkers' constitution. I think it's the metalworkers', you know. I don't think. They have it in their constitution. Any man that teaches a woman a trade will be suspended. The cigar makers union. You think, what happened? They had a strike and the women went in. They weren't organized. There was a kickback, like a feedback. Well, who are you going to blame for that? You can't put all the blame on the women for it. They asked for it. Is a woman different from a man? Sure, the biologically, yes. Mentally, I think you can measure it up in the long run.
Well, during the 1910 strike, the women, not just the trade union league, were middle class women.
Oh, they did an awful lot. They helped tremendously. They had educational meetings. You come across, I'll show you, I have to refresh my memory because the tragedy of it, they couldn't marry me off. They tried. I won't tell you, they didn't try. Or they couldn't involve me in a scandal. I was very careful. I don't say that I was an angel alive and I have my life. But I never mixed my politics in the union with my private life. I was careful because when you're in the public eye, you have to be above suspicion. That is true, whether you like it or not. It's like... Now, you take... You'll find it in this book that I'm going to give you. Dorothy Blanca. I showed you the picture where I was taking with Bessie Hillman. She was the first member on the General Executive Board. They married her off. And then her husband became on the General Executive Board. I spent a lot of time with her discussing these things. And the Women's Bureau was trying to bring about a Women's Bureau. She talks about it.
So 1910 really began your work gradually building. Now, after the strike, you went back to Hart-Scheffer and Marx after it was settled then?
After the strike, I went back. When Friday came, I asked for a press to go home. And they told me if you could be on the picket line on Saturday, you can work on Saturday. And if you can't work on Saturday, get the hell out of here.
Now the union couldn't help you. Did you go to the union?
No, I didn't earn it. I didn't know enough. I didn't know enough. I was uninformed. All I knew that you got a strike, and I didn't comprehend the whole thing. I didn't know enough.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, what I lacked in those days. If I would know half of it, I learned as I went along. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't know anything. The fact is, I thought that I could take the people from a shop and bring them to my house. You see what happened after that? I didn't go back. They told me to get the hell out. I went. Now, I was without work, I don't know for how long. And then I got a job, and I took the people out on strike because they wanted to cut their wages. That much I understood it was wrong. So I brought, instead of taking them down to the union, I brought them to my house. Instead of telling them to go down and see so-and-so, I didn't know the difference. Strike. I didn't know. I had no comprehension.
Now, what happened with that strike?
I don't know.
They walked out.
They walked out. I didn't follow up.
So you just left, and you don't know what happened?
I know. I don't.
So you really, at that point, you were so green and
I was very.
You didn't know what?
No, I was absolutely uninformed.
Now, you talked about being blacklisted after you were fired from
the
car. How did that blacklisting work exactly?
Huh? There was the Manufacturing Association. They had a record of every striker. And they looked up.
So you go to one of their shops and...
Yeah, sure. Now, it so happened that this was, I think, 1912, I think, that I started work at Charles Kaufman when I told you about this man.
Now, did you have to go to this Medina Labor Temple in order to get jobs?
No.
So it was just that you'd go to the shop
I went
and
they'd
look in the book?
And I went from door to door, the Medina Temple. See, I wasn't worse on those things. I was still uninformed.
Your next job, after you took these people out on strike, you just went and looked for another job.
Yeah.
And you got the job at the Charles Coffin.
Yeah.
So by this point was 1912 then.
Yeah.
Now, what was your union involvement like at that time?
I don't know. I didn't follow the truth. I worked for the non-union shop. They didn't. The only place that was organized in 1910 was Hart-Scheffer Marx. They had a preferential shop. I started work in Charles Kaufman. I thought it was something. I still, at this age, I still dream of this man. It's a strange thing. it's a strange thing because what I had between, and as I say, I never as much as let him kiss me. It's an odd after incident. But he was very nice to me. Then in 19, I worked there for about a year and a half, and he opened up a shop for him, a contracting shop for himself. And he came to the house. I remained working with Charles Cotton. He came to the house and asked me to go to work for him. And I said, yeah, I went to work for him. And I worked from 1915, there was another strike. The strike broke out and my two sisters worked with me. I dragged them with me, you know. like the old hand. I think if it wouldn't have been for them, maybe there would have been something, but they... That's more personal. I don't want to get into that. But the strike broke out and there was a little Jewish pocket maker. He blew the whistle. In the meantime, I was trying to try to follow up, see what goes on in the labor movement. I tried to get acquainted more. I never let go entirely at the movement. I was active in the socialist campaign and made collections outside and attended meetings.
Would you have to secretly go to union meetings so that no one would know before the strike in 1915?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. They keep that, of course. So I didn't go. I went to political meetings. I was more interested in politics at the time. Anyway, so he blew the whistle, I picked myself up, and I went. He stopped me at the door and told me, he says, where are you going? What business have you got to go? Well, I don't. Not only did I go, I told him, I says, if it was a question of my life, I'd give up my principle. I says, I'll give my life up and I won't give up my principle. I'm going out on strike. People are going out on strike to better their conditions. And I, not only did I go out on strike, but I became chairlady of the strike hall.
Now what did that mean exactly?
What it means is to take care of a multitude of people, feed them, and send them out on picket lines, and be on the picket line all hours of day and night. And not only that, from this very shop, I had to distribute money, aid, help, whatever was necessary. And for instance, there was a campus baster who earned, I think, $5 or $6 a week. And I made it my business because I know he was cabby inclined. I gave him $8. He went back scabbing. Of course, he got his share. I made it my business that he's taken care of. You want to know what it was? All right, to cut the long story short, you see, during this period, he got married. My boss got married. All right. It has nothing to do with, but had a hell of a lot to do with me, other than my emotions. But I tell you, as I said, you could have just taken my life, I wouldn't have, I didn't, there was nothing under the sun that could have dissuaded me from striking, or doing my part for the union. I went up there to investigate. And he sent up somebody that he wants to settle a strike. As that, you see, by then, in 1915, I knew it. I said, go see so-and-so. He says, I saw him, and here's the agreement. So he has the agreement active. There was 60 or 70 people. Well, it wasn't a big shop. And I took banners. And in Milwaukee, and I don't know whether you're familiar with Chicago, you are. And he paraded with 81 to strike. We marched, we won the strike. I was suspicious of the tremor, and I examined the work as it came in. And I saw some work that came in from a non-union place, and I thought to myself, this isn't kosher. I couldn't take it. I called up the union and they said, one of the head operators says to me, sir, he says, what do you care? I said, we pay the dues, we'll keep up the union. What do you care? Let it go. I said, not me. Let so-and-so do it. I can't do it. I couldn't take it. I don't remember the exact details. But I know I couldn't work. They told me not to take the people out. Let the people work from the headquarters. I couldn't stomach it. See, I walked out. I left them there. So that I went back to Rochester and Max.
Oh, so that was shortly after the strike then?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I went back to Rochester and Max. Until the war broke out. Then I had to get out, because they told me if I didn't buy Liberty Bonds, I should get the hell out again. I had to skip town.
So all the employees were told they had to buy Liberty Bonds?
Well, they didn't say they had to.
Yeah,
but I spoke against it. I wasn't satisfied by not buying. That wasn't enough. See, by then I was red hot. Well, it's...
Did the union support you on that?
No, that's what I'm telling you. They were the ones that told me to get out.
Oh.
The company didn't tell me to get out.
So the union was involved in, oh, I remember that, in buying the Liberty Bonds.
Yeah.
So they were really supporting the war then?
Well, they were supporting Liberty Bonds, not the war.
But that's what paid for the war.
Well, listen, they weren't supporting them. They weren't supporting them. I was supporting debts, not...
Now, weren't most of the people that involved in the union at that point socialist, though?
Well, yes, so-called. They weren't real. See, with me, it wasn't... I wasn't head-baked. Fortunately or otherwise, I'm not head-baked. I'm either or. And I'm not sorry. I could have been sitting in the office today. I'm glad that I didn't. I can walk in today and I walk in people that didn't see me for 15 years. There were a few people that can say that.
Well,
they're job holders.
Now, Sarah, when you went back, so then during the war, they told you to leave Rochester and Marx.
And they told me confidentially, they didn't tell me.
Yeah.
They didn't make no... So you see, to get out, so I thought, well, I'm not... I left Rochester and Marx and I went into a little shop. I got a job because I was a good worker. I got a job right away.
What, now was this other shop organized?
No. It wasn't organized. No, it wasn't. The city became organized in 1919.
Now, what would happen when you go into an unorganized shop? Would you then start talking
to them? Oh, yes. I'll tell you about that.
Well, tell me how you used to do that when you go into the...
How I used to do that? Now, I went in, offhand, I can't names. I remember names just not now. I went into, how I used to do it, I went into one shop. And I was visiting animals at that time, and they were very pleased. Lunchtime, I started talking to the girls, women. Well, what the hell are you doing this for? You joined the union, so on. Look at how much more they get in hatch of the marks and so on. They squealed on me. In the afternoon, all the work that I made in the morning, they brought me back. He took the scissors and started opening up. I said, what's the matter? They were all right in the morning, now they're no good. He takes the scissors and the scissors was backstitched. I said, listen, if I take that scissors and put them through your nostrils, and I was getting, I says, that'd be no good either. And I took the coat, put it on his head. And I let him have it. So, what is supposed to happen? That was one. Well, I went into Hershey Choir, that was a fancy place. I had Mazel. There was an Italian fellow, a good looking. I like good looking people. I like good looking people, period. He hired me. I was working the arts just in America, but I went out to art on my own. I took time off. Well, how do I, and that was a real sketch jump. But I knew there are some people from the 1910, 1915 strike that are left, that there's some soul somewhere. So I started whistling the International. And I got echoes. And that's how I made contact. Well, then the phone wanted me to date with. I mean, things like that. But that's how we used to organize.
What would happen after you'd make the contact then?
Well, they'd join the union. It's confidentially, on the sly. Listen, even I paid my dues and hatches and marks under the table after the strike.
It couldn't be paid out in the open after the
strike? No, because if they found out anybody that was active, they were after them. See, it was a preferential ship. You could belong to the union and you didn't have to. Now, when I became chairlady, for instance, Harchester Marx, this was in 1919, there were 1,000 people in that factory. There was a protest about Tom Mooney, you know. And first they said we should all go out on strike, and then they recalled, and I said, once it said, I pulled them out. Against the union rules. You see, I wasn't a yes man. Was I right? I don't know. I used to tell him 90 times I'm right, maybe I'm wrong once, but I didn't. I pulled them out.
Was this when they were trying to call a general strike around the country for
Mooney? Yeah. You see, first they said we should pull them out. Then they changed. People didn't want, they weren't ready for it. They used to, then it was more ready after 1980, after 1980 was already more, you could collect these. But then, so there was one particular individual, that, you know, these outstanding creatures turned out in my mind. One woman, when I approached her for dues, She called me every name under the sun. I said, oh yeah? And at that time, me and Eddie had a little bit more power in the union. The business agent says, I'm the driller for it. I said, no, I always felt that that's not the way to make union people out of. She says, she's going to report me to the foreman. I said, go ahead. Go ahead, do that. But in the meantime, pay your dues or you get out. And I put in the system, it's never mentioned anywhere, and I don't give a good goddamn. I put in the system to collect dues once a month instead of going every time there's payday, bother. You know, those things are never mentioned, and I no more care. I don't care if you don't mention my name, what I'm telling you. It doesn't bother me. As long as it's recorded, it's done, it's accomplished. Yeah, I never cared for publicity. I went through strikes, I went through stoppages in the shop, nobody knew where it came from. The business agent says was against the agreement to strike. I made stoppages, nobody knew where it came from. I told the people, go back to work. But I knew whom to tell, but you're there if you want to. Because sometimes you have to do the unethical thing. On the other hand, when I saw that the company was in danger of closing down, I'd rather give and keep the shop open and put people out of work. You see, I didn't use their heads. I used
my. You were too independent for them, though, weren't you?
That's why they were afraid of me.
Now, it sounds like you didn't have too much trouble whenever you wanted to always go back to Hart, Chapman, and Marx, though.
No, well, they always needed a good horse. Yes. I want to tell you, let's talk about women. The last job that I had was a special job. Was creating that job took in Hart, Chapman and Marx to make a humid garment. No, a humid garment wouldn't be enough. 200 garments would take 15 finishers, at least the minimum 15 finishers. They put in a machine, one person. That job was created by women. Women was tried out on it, and women made the job. And only women worked on it. Just a minute. That became a very good paying job. And as soon as they saw it became a good paying job, they started pushing men in and pushing the women out. Until I got next. I said, no. This is a woman's job. No man is going to get in here. Then in 1920, when was it? No. 1923, it started being slack, and they offered They're closing up shops. They offered the women $200 on this particular job to get out. I warned them. I said, don't take it. Don't give up. Stay there, stick it out. In the meantime, I went to Brookwood Labor College. They cleaned them out completely. They put all men on there. Now, when I came back, I had, they wanted to get rid of me too. Well, if I show you the record what I did, I broke the manager's window and whatnot. Well, this what happened. You see that? That's. So who are you going to blame? Well, they say that equal work, equal pay for equal work. Oh, equal. Then the Negroes have the same right. Yeah, they can clean the toilets.